Are you going to accept?
As well informed as he appeared to be, I didn't see the harm in telling him the truth. I don't have much choice.
The inauguration is in 2 days.
He scuffed a black cowboy boot on the pavement.
I'll give you 24 hours to decide if my master sends you a car and driver, or if he sends me instead.
Clan Volkov has offered me an alliance with their heritor. The thin bluff was all the protection I could muster. Denil won't be pleased to hear another clan is threatening an interest of his. The vampire smiled, fangs on display.
I can hear your mother in your voice.
The barb struck home. How do you know my mother?
There are a lot of things I know about you, Greer. Maybe I'll tell you a few of them sometime.
He tipped the brim of an imaginary hat and strolled across the lot into the shadows.
Night, ma'am.
Wait. I had to snap my jaw shut to keep the word from escaping, but an arm shot out all on its own, fingers curling with the urge to call him back.
It was a trick. It had to be.
Mom had no family left, and Maud and Odette were the only friends she had mentioned. This male was a predator, and he read in me a weakness he could exploit. That was all. I climbed on Jolene and sped away before curiosity got the better of me. Wooly gusted a sigh of relief in the form of rattling floor registers when I walked through the front door.
All's well?
I padded to the empty birdcage and stared at the swing like that might bring Keat back. No trouble while I was gone? The floorboards groaned a nervous affirmation. I'm going to walk the perimeter. I pocketed the bottle of ink and the brush, just in case. I want to get another look at things before I call it a day. The front door stuck a bit on my way out, but she let me go. 3 hours later, dawn was a pink smudge on the horizon, and I was still clearing away the brittle vines and lichen covering the foundation to better see the etched sigils when the gate creaked behind me.
What are you doing out here?
Amelie drifted closer.
I figured you'd be in bed by now.
Not that I mind you skulking through my yard at dawn when you think I'm asleep. I grunted as I stood. But do I get to know the reason?
Boaz.
She hiccuped a sob.
He's been drafted.
Drafted? The word, so unexpected, stumped me. Try as I might, I couldn't draw a straight line between that word and his name.
But he's already in the army.
No, not the army. She wiped her cheeks with the backs of her hands.
The sentinels.
Cold sweat beaded down my spine as memories of black-clad enforcers prowling darkened hallways surfaced. Batons in hand, they'd clanged the metal rods against the bars, against fingers, often breaking them, when inmates woke from their stupors long enough to plead for mercy that was never granted.
They'd draft from the low society to fill their ranks, but he was passed over when he was 18.
Crossing to me in a daze, she rested her head on my shoulder, and I wrapped my arms around her.
We thought he was safe.
Until he came home fully trained, I finished for her, a shudder in my breath. I ought to be used to fate kicking me when I was down. But this, I just got Boaz back. I didn't want to lose him again so soon.
Mom got a letter a few days ago. I brought it to her while she was dusting, and she broke the crystal bowl Gran got her as a wedding gift. It slipped through her fingers while she read.
As the matron of their family, the news would have gone to her and not him.
Turns out Boaz wasn't given leave. He was discharged. The paperwork got pushed through right after he left. He didn't believe it until he called his commander to verify.
The society had ended his career with a letter, and he would despise them for that. Like he needed another reason.
They won't station him at Atramentis, she said. Like that made this any better. He protested when you were taken. He was arrested twice.
Betty didn't tell you that.
She gave a watery laugh. He was on a watch list for a while. That's why our folks encouraged him to join the army. They wanted him as far away from the society as possible.
That idiot,
I murmured against her hair, my heart swelling.
He really is.
She sniffled. But he's an asset, and they're willing to overlook his record. I bit my lip to keep from asking again what exactly the army had him doing, but she wouldn't rat him out, and he wasn't ready to share.
What do your parents think?
I held her at arm's length. Can your mom?
No.
Her bottom lip trembled. She told us tonight she's been fighting it for the past 2 years, since before he re-upped. She thought that might keep him out of their clutches. But it's no use. Dad has a sterling service record, and Boaz followed in his footsteps. You know how big the society is on bloodlines. They expect families to stay pigeonholed. Plus, he can't cause them trouble if he's somewhere they can monitor him. Amelie went quiet, and again I wondered what I was missing. As much as I had looked forward to spilling my guts when she got home, I couldn't dump my problems on top of hers while she was one sob away from shattering. My troubles would keep for another day.
Want me to walk you home?
I dusted off my knees and my hands. I can regale you with tales from the tours you missed, including that goth bridal shower. I didn't wait for an answer, but flung my arm around her shoulders and aimed us toward her house. I had to confiscate a dead pigeon from the maid of honor. I don't know where she got it. I didn't ask. All I could think was I didn't want to witness her biting its head off, or worse. She leaned her head against mine. I always miss the good stuff. I escorted her home, and she stole another hug before vanishing inside the house.
Greer, a weathered voice rasped. Do you have a minute?
Mr. Pritchard. I whirled toward the driveway, and the older man standing there.
Hi.
Amelie told you the news.
His sigh conveyed his thoughts on the draft.
We worried this day might come. Boaz is a good man. A good soldier. But he's reckless and pig-headed and big-hearted, too. It's a dangerous combination.
Unsure what response he wanted from me, I stood there and listened while he vented.
They're going to send him away. There are no prisons near here that require his specialty.
He shifted his weight from one foot to the other.
You three have always been thick as thieves. And I know this is going to be hard on Amelie and on you.
Yes, sir.
On that, we agreed. Boaz is one of my best friends. I'll miss him.
I'm glad to hear you call him your friend. That things haven't.
He coughed once into his fist.
Progressed.
Oh, to be a specter and able to turn invisible at will.
We only have to look as far as your house to find him these days.
He spread the fingers of one hand.
I just don't want to see either of you get hurt. Long-distance relationships are hard. You can ask his mother about that. She didn't see much of me for the first 3 years of our marriage. I came home a stranger to a stranger. We had grown up, grown apart, and it took a dedicated effort on our part to mend our relationship.
Theirs had been an arranged marriage, one of the few good matches I could name, but that left them no choice except to mend those bridges. Divorces were taboo among society members. Lifetime estrangement from spouses were far more common, and the details much juicier besides. A cold stone dropped into my stomach.
I see.
Me too,
Boaz drawled from behind me.
Thanks for the pep talk, Dad. Greer and I can take this from here.
Father and son entered a staring contest over my head, and I got the feeling Mr. Pritchard lost since he backed down first.
Turning on his heel, he marched into the house with a stiff set to his shoulders. The class divide had kept the Pritchards from embracing me as they had Amelie's other friends. Factor in my raging crush on Boaz, an attachment Maud had been willing to humor, so long as it wasn't reciprocal, and I got how they might have viewed me as a ticking time bomb of teenage hormones. It just sucked that they were apparently still waiting for me to go boom.
Walk you home?
He offered his arm like a gentleman.
I could use the exercise after being cooped up in a car all night.
I hooked my arm through his, but kept a respectable distance between us. After we crossed the property line, he murmured,
"So."
"So," I said in agreement.
"When do you leave?"
I forced myself not to haul him closer to prove he was still here.
"Did they give you an estimate, or—"
"2 weeks."
"2 weeks.
Is there an echo out here?"
He jabbed me in the ribs.
"Stop feeding me my own words and dish out some of your own."
"You want the truth?"
Asking was a formality. I already knew his answer.
"Always."
"I hate that you're leaving. I wish you could stay."
"I don't want you to go." "You're going to make me blush."
He tugged me closer until our sides were flush.
"If I'd known the draft was what it took to win you over, I would have volunteered a long time ago."
"Liar." I snorted a laugh. "You keep trying to twist things around, but I'm the one who nursed a crush for like 10 years. You probably wouldn't have noticed I was gone if I hadn't sprouted boobs there at the end."
"That's not true. What happened to you?"
The muscles in his arm tightened beneath my hand.
"Forget I said anything. I know you don't want to talk about it."
"I'm getting there."
For the first time, it felt like that might not be a lie.
"You better get back before your dad sends out a rescue party."
I unlinked our arms.
"Try not to be too hard on him, okay?"
"The old coot is trying to scare you off," he said, incredulous. "That is not okay."
He's got a point. As much as I hated to see the hurt flash in Boaz's eyes, there was no denying that. I can't leave Wooly, and you can't stay. Army or the Sentinels, you have to leave either way. After all these years of pining after him, I wasn't sure I had much more patience left in me. I was done waiting for my life to start. I wanted to live while I could, in case this taste of freedom soured.
"I hate when you use logic against me."
Quick as a flash, he stole a kiss from me. Just a brush of his lips that set mine tingling.
"Good thing I'm too stubborn for that nonsense to stick."
"You kissed me," I stammered.
"That's not a kiss."
His knuckles scored a line down my cheek.
"However, I am willing to demonstrate the proper method. With tongue."
My very first kiss, and from the glint in his eyes, he knew it, too.
Jerk.
Yet he claimed he didn't count.
Fine. Neither would I.
"Go home, Boaz." I shoved him back with a palm to his chest. "Next time, keep your lips to yourself."
"What fun would that be?"
His cocky grin resurfaced.
"You taste like cinnamon."
"And you taste like the breath mint you popped, knowing you were going to put the moves on me."
"Ouch."
He clutched his chest.
"You wound me. Can't a man be both minty fresh and spontaneous with his affection?"
"Bye-bye." I waved him off and headed inside the house. The empty birdcage stood in the corner of the living room like an accusation. Keith hadn't been with us long this time, but his absence radiated through the silent room, stained with a psychic oil spill from where the wraith had lingered while he left his message. There was nothing left but to wait out the inauguration, when the bird poop would really hit the fan. 6. Cinderella was never going to be my favorite fairy tale,
The whole scrubbing until your fingers pruned and blistered did not appeal. But as dry and cracked as my hands were from all the rubbing, digging, and scraping around Wooly's foundation, I glowed with a sense of accomplishment. I had been lacking a purpose since my return, besides the daily grind of survival, but it seemed I'd found a project to occupy me. Wooly was getting a defensive overhaul. All I needed was a smidgen of guidance to get me started. But a visit to Odette would have to wait. I had more pressing obligations this fine Monday night. As in, I planned to press Volkov for every scrap of information he could give me on my stalker. Who he might be, what he might want, what master pulled his strings, and how Mom fit into his equation. With Amelie's help, I had dressed to thrill in a swishy sundress I hoped would win me points with Volkov. Figurative ones, not fangs. She had piled my hair on top of my head in a half-twist that left tendrils framing my face. A few deft strokes of concealer hid the bags growing darker under my eyes, and the gloss she swiped over my lips plumped what little I had to work with in that department. The matching ballet flats kept the look casual, but I hadn't been this done up in ages outside of work, and it felt good to be both girly and able to breathe at the same time. I spun out the front door, humming a popular country song, and smacked into a wall of vampire. Oof! Didn't sound sexy, no matter how dolled up you were. I thought we agreed to meet at the fountain. As per his texted instructions, I scooted forward and pulled the door shut behind me. Not that it would stop Wooly if she wanted to invite him in later. Did I misunderstand?
I was in the neighborhood, and...
The obvious lie caused his lips to curve with amusement when he noticed my budding scowl.
Perhaps it is more honest to say I made certain I was in the neighborhood.
A sleek black car awaited us at the end of my driveway, and the same thin male dressed in a black suit held open the rear passenger door. His jaunty chauffeur's hat made me grin.
Ma'am?
Fancy, I teased Volkov, who shrugged as though his wealth and my perception of it didn't bother him. A male, comfortable in his own skin. I admired that, particularly since his skin was built to weather eternity. I ducked inside and breathed in the new leather smell. Forget eternal life. This right here was a perk worth not dying for. Volkov joined me, and I realized my mistake. His scent drifted around me, much more potent in an enclosed space, and my gut clenched. I was eyeballing the bench seat and wondering if he had ever gotten friendly with a just friend back here, when he scooted until our thighs brushed and put his arm behind me. At my side, I gave the bangle a subtle shake, like it was a glow stick in need of activating.
Where does the tour begin?
His fingertips toyed with my shoulder, and he released a contented sigh as the car pulled out into traffic. The more he relaxed, the tighter I wound until I couldn't stop my leg from bouncing. This isn't a date, is it?
Do you want it to be?
He flung back at me. Do you want to date the nice vampire would eventually segue into, do you want to feed the nice vampire? And the answer was no.
Then we will remain friends.
He frowned down at our proximity and gave his head a little shake.
My apologies.
His fingers circled my wrist, his thumb stroking the skin, the veins under the bangle.
The sight of blood arouses.
A growl roughened his voice.
The sight of you wearing mine...
He loosened his fingers one by one, as if the effort cost him, and rested his palm flat on his thigh.
I was unprepared for the effect.
It's fine. I tried not to think about how we still pressed together from hip to knee. At least now my stomach had settled. How about we get things started? I swallowed my nerves and donned my tour guide persona. I can't say I've narrated a driving tour, but I'm sure I can manage. I twisted a bit to give myself a few precious inches of breathing room and picked the first landmark I recognized. See that pub? It's a favorite of all the locals. You don't find too many tourists there. Too smoky. Too loud and too wild on ladies' night.
You sound as if you're speaking from experience.
Did I mention the likelihood of them carding you goes lower as your hem goes higher? Following Boaz like a love-struck puppy had given me one heck of an education, in more ways than one. Volkov raked his gaze over me, assessing.
How old are you?
Curiosity pulsed behind the words, and I wondered how often he interacted with my kind. Or humans, for that matter. Necromancers commanded respect. Humans, on the other hand, were food, their lives too short for most vampires to take notice of them. 21? Old enough to bar hop without the fake ID for a change.
So young, he murmured.
How old are you?
35,
he admitted.
Does that make you uncomfortable?
Age is just a number between friends, I assured him, unwilling to consider the true issue.
So it is.
His rich chuckle rewarded me.
Can I ask if I'm your only friend with a sun allergy?
You can, and you are. I fiddled with his bangle, which snapped his gaze to my wrist. Slowly, before I compounded my faux pas, I slid my hand out of sight to avoid the temptation to fidget. I do, however, have a stalker of the undead variety. With Volkov pressed so close, I felt his thigh muscles tense.
What do you mean?
A vampire was waiting for me when I got home from work the night I met you. I outlined our conversation, and his threats from the parking lot, too. Any clue who he might represent?
Without a name, it's impossible to guess.
He drummed his fingers on his knee.
You're a valuable asset, Greer. All the clans with means will be in contact with you in the coming days. Of that, I'm certain. It could be that this male represents a clan without the funds or clout to win you over by traditional means, and seeks to intimidate you.
Do I get to know why everyone wants a piece of me all of a sudden?
It's not my place.
Frustration turned his comment bitter.
You'll learn soon enough, and when you do, you'll understand why an alliance will be beneficial to you, and why remaining unallied will only encourage more such incidents.
Thinking back on what Odette told me, I had to be certain he and I were on the same page. You're talking about me marrying for protection.
Yes.
And you're okay with your master offering you up on a silver platter?
You're beautiful, kind, and intelligent. I could do far worse.
He sobered.
Do you understand how the vampiric clan system operates?
I understand basic vampire biology and how the undead caste system works. The rest wasn't a concern of mine. I was being trained as an assistant and not as a practitioner. A peculiar expression swept over his features before he smoothed them.
Last seeds are a caste unto themselves, but we are loyal to the clan that bred us. For me, that was Clan Volkov. I'm the first last seed my line has produced in centuries. I will outlive them all. And that makes it my sworn duty to oversee the protection, growth, and well-being of the clan. As the youngest born vampire, I am the heritor. But one day soon, I will be named master.
I gulped audibly, and his eyes tracked the motion as my throat worked. You've got the wrong girl for the job, Mr. Volkov. A clan master's wife I was not. I could barely take care of myself, let alone hundreds of undead.
Daniel, he insisted. You're young, but you're strong. I would be proud to have you at my side.
Until I turn old and gray, I mumbled. I'll be honest here. I'm not sure I could handle aging while you stay young and gorgeous. I'm not a vain person, I don't think, but it would poison me from the inside out if I had to know you were entertaining younger, more beautiful women on the side.
Our vows are sacred.
He shifted to look at me head on.
Accept my offer, and you accept me for who and what I am, as I will accept you for who and what you are. I will be yours until your dying breath, and I vow I will never injure your pride or your heart.
I was just granted my freedom. I can't toss it away without a good reason, and you can't give me one.
I am under orders I can't break.
His gaze skittered to the window.
No matter how much I might wish to gain the advantage with you, I am bound to silence.
A concern niggled at the back of my mind, and it popped out before I could filter my mouth. Eriders are answerable only to their masters, and the grand dame of the society.
See what I mean? Intelligent.
His slow smile held a razor's edge.
You are also correct.
Black spots danced in my vision at what he wasn't telling me. The Grand Dame had anticipated the offer his master and the others would make, and she must have put orders in place to hobble their efforts as much as possible, meaning she intended to make an offer herself. Not good. Not good at all. I took a moment to study his profile while his attention was fixated elsewhere. Will you attend the inauguration tomorrow night?
I have no choice.
Catching the slip-up, he amended with,
It's my pleasure to witness history in the making as the first Grand Dame of my generation is named.
I snorted out a laugh. You sound about as happy as I am to be going.
Born vampires aren't allowed much socialization outside our clans until we reach our majority. You're the first necromancer I've engaged in conversation. Are your kind not the community-minded group they present themselves to be?
His bland delivery informed me he was well aware of what dangerous waters he treaded.
Isn't that the point of calling themselves a society?
We have a Grand Dame. I shook my head. Necromancers are all about the prestige. The Society for Post-Death Management sounds more upscale and corporate than We'll Raise the Dead for Cash, Inc. A rich, dark laugh broke from his chest.
You have more reason than most to resent their antiquated hierarchy.
They aren't all bad. The High Society is the most ridiculous. The Low Society is more relatable.
Interesting, he mused. I would have thought being raised by Maud Woolworth would have ensured the exact opposite.
I came into the culture late in life by their standards. My formal education started when I was 5, which put me years behind my high society peers. Factor in my public school education, which exposed me to humans and low society as my classmates, and I grew into too much of my own person to conform. Stubborn as the day is long, just like your mother. That was Maud's favorite lament. Plus, Maud was not the conformist type. Dame Lawson despaired of me, the orphan her sister had adopted. She was determined the Woolworth heir act like a lady. She doesn't have any daughters, only her son, Linus. She played with me like a doll until she grew bored with her attempts at taming me. She stuck bows in my hair I ripped out when her back was turned, and I wore shorts under my skirts so I could strip them off after dinner and run outside to play. Maud just laughed and told her sister, girls will be girls.
You are not close to Dame Lawson, then?
No. There was nothing more I could say about her that wouldn't plunge me into the abyss. All my memories of that woman were strung on a thread that tied to the same fixed point in time. The worst night of my life, her recent antics included.
What started as rage over what she'd ordered done to Wooly morphed to grief over Keith's abduction, which spun my thoughts back to the last time I'd faced her in the Lyceum, along with the other society dames and matrons. I hadn't come out on top then, and I doubted I'd climb to new heights tomorrow. All signs pointed toward new lows being in the forecast. At least I would get my bird back. Perhaps sensing the taut wire of my temper vibrating, he set about diffusing my anger.
What can you tell me about that building?
Though it took a moment to relocate my tour guide persona, I reapplied her within seconds, a trick learned from Amelie. The Black Heart was built in the early 1800s. It went by another name then, White Sparrow's Tavern. The spiel tumbled out with practiced ease, and I took comfort in the cadence of the story. Patrons swear the building is haunted by the original owner, Brutus Sparrow, who bricked his mistress up in the basement when she tried to leave him. Folks claim he loved her so much that when she made amends with her husband, he slit her throat and walled up her corpse so he could keep her forever. Even now, his wails of grief at having killed the love of his life can be heard on clear nights, and a few have even seen her wandering the halls, dressed in a filmy white nightgown slicked with blood from the gash in her throat.
What about that one?
Volkov indicated the mom-and-pop grocery store where I liked to buy fresh fruit.
Surely there can't be horror attached to such a wholesome place.
You would be wrong. I took his dare merrily. The same family has owned the property since the 1920s. A Cat 1 hurricane hit Beaufort, South Carolina in September of 1928, and it produced more than a foot of rain that caused significant flooding in Savannah. Only this end of town escaped unscathed. Everything from River Street down was underwater, including the hospital. Newspaper clippings tell us that, since the market was the largest structure standing, it was cleared out, and cops were brought in to aid the victims. I wiggled my fingers at him. According to the current owners, some mornings they go in to open the store and find lights on, and objects moved by the restless spirits who perished there, and the brave souls who fought to save them.
Remarkable.
This town is mired in creepy. All old cities are, if you dig deep enough.
I don't mean the town.
His fingers brushed my arm.
I mean you.
Friends don't let friends flatter unnecessarily. I popped his hand. Bad vampire.
I braced for the worst.
He made a vague gesture.
I expected you to be...
bitter? Reclusive? Insane?
Yes.
He agreed with a wince. Finish your thought. I waved him on. I can take it.
I came to you prepared to sacrifice myself for my clan. But I see now I was a fool to doubt my master's wisdom. What he asked of me is no sacrifice at all.
I'm broken, Denil. As a maybe friend or possible ally, I owed him that truth. I'm held together with bubblegum, and the next time life chews me up and spits me out, this sanity thing might not stick. He clasped my hands between his much larger ones.
I can't protect you from the teeth. Life grinds us all down. But you will discover in time I am exceptional when it comes to sticking around.
We're friends until you do something jackassy that makes me break up with you. Or I do. I extricated myself from his grasp before I gave him the wrong idea. There's a solid 50-50 chance one of us will blow this.
I'll take a 50-50 shot over none at all.
He settled back against the seat, content.
Who will you bring with you to the inauguration? The friend I met?
Boaz? I imagined him on my arm, his warmth thawing the chill in my heart. But the image flickered into him vaulting from the amphitheater's lush marble floor into the stadium-like seats, where he'd strangle the new grande dame with her own pantyhose.
No, definitely not. I had already lost him to the draft. I wasn't about to let him commit treason. I plan on going stag.
Would you consider a formal escort rather than a date?
Call me paranoid, but I'm 99.9% sure tomorrow night will spell my doom in all caps. A date, escort, whatever, would also get in the way of her negotiating with me for Keith's safe return. You don't want to get mixed up in this. Not when she has pull with your clan and can make your life miserable until she kicks the bucket.
What is one century in the span of my lifetime?
The tips of his fangs, lengthening with his desire to protect. Probably another side effect of wearing his blood as a fashion statement, pressed into his bottom lip.
Let me prove my worth. Let me show you the value in my offer. Let me give you, at least for one night, the comfort of having a clan at your back.
His voice lowered.
You don't have to face her alone. And unlike your friend, I can behave.
He rolled a wide shoulder.
Within reason.
Arriving with Volkov on my arm would make a statement, and it would be nice not to face the firing squad alone. Okay. I stuck out my hand, and his engulfed mine when we shook. It's not a date. 7. My stalker, Pyre, failed to put in his threatened appearance, but that likely had more to do with the 2 slabs of beef Volkov ordered to stand guard at my front door the rest of the night and into the next day than any change of heart. Neither male would meet my eyes, but when I checked on them before bed, they addressed me with a quiet reverence that unsettled me. Apparently, my value was a well-known commodity to everyone. Except me. Or, I had to allow, it was possible they merely protected that which their heritor deemed valuable. They might have done the same for any woman who found herself in Volkov's crosshairs. How awkward that must make dating for him. I could stand the cage he'd lowered around me for now, until I got my answers at the inauguration, but I would suffocate beneath such precautions over time. Having known the inside of a cell intimately, I had promised myself never to return to one, no matter how well-intended the protection might be. Plus, it was downright humiliating when the bodyguards stampeded up the stairs and bulldozed into my room at dusk after they heard me screaming in my sleep, waking up to 2 vamps, bangs out. Hissing at shadows in my room was almost worse than traversing the dark and twisting dreamscape of my mind. Well, I had warned Volkov I was broken, right? Maybe evidence of exactly how shattered would send him running. An All's Well chime rang out, and I fought a losing battle with a grin as my company arrived.
Damn, girl! This is your house?
Neely gawked on the front porch.
It's gorgeous.
Thanks. The porch light near him flickered the tiniest bit as Wooly preened, and I cleared my throat loudly to remind her not to show off in front of our very human guest. Come on in.
What's the deal with your bookends?
He asked once the door shut behind him and his rolling bag.
They look like bodyguards.
His eyes rounded.
Are they bodyguards?
I winced and told a half-truth. The guy I'm dating is overprotective. And the vamps, after my screaming episode, had refused to budge from their posts during Neely's visit. They were already dead. It wouldn't have killed them to hide in the bushes for a couple of hours.
Are we talking celebrity protective? Political figure protective?
He glanced over his shoulder like he could still feel their eyes on him.
Or are we talking mob protective?
He lowered his voice.
Do you need help? Tug your earlobe once for yes and twice for no.
Neely! I burst out laughing. Denil Volkov is a lot of things, but a mob boss is not one of them. I twisted the truth,
An ugly necessity around humans, yet again. A strange man was spotted on my property after our first date. Considering who he is, he's concerned for my safety, is all. Volkov? He squeaked, dropping his bag's handle and grabbing me by the shoulders. He shook me until my eyes rattled. Are you insane? Volkov House is a shrine to that family's obsession to acquire what they want at any price. And that was just a charred pile of lumber. Chills blasted up my arms for reasons I couldn't pinpoint. I was aware of the house's bloody history, and I had an inkling of Volkov's clout. Though it would help if I could access Wooly's basement to get at the library. But Neely's perceptiveness had switched on a light in my head that wouldn't fade anytime soon. Before I wrapped my mouth around a defense of Volkov's honor, Wooly chimed again. This time there was a trill of excitement in the sound I hoped Neely would blame on bad wiring. Hold that thought. I scrambled to the front door, half expecting to find one of the siblings Pritchard. But a third vampire stood on the porch, wearing a familiar jaunty hat with a garment bag slung over his shoulder. It's official. Woolworth House is infested. Hi. Can I help you?
Mr. Volkov sends his regards, miss.
He slid the bag down his arm and then offered it to me.
And this.
What is... Through the peephole near the zipper, I spied silky blue fabric. He bought me a dress?
Apologies, miss, if this seems too forward.
He extended his arms farther, careful not to reach across the threshold.
The invitations went out late by the usual standards, and he worried you might not have had an opportunity to shop for the occasion.
Or the funds for a dress as extravagant as my former rank required. None of the gowns in my closet still fit. Not even a corset could save me. Borrowing from Amelie had been my only option, but the simple cut and serviceable materials were the low society equivalent of a uniform, albeit a lovely one, and I would have stood out like a sore thumb amid the high society glam. With one thoughtful gesture, Volkov had spared me from cutting remarks hidden behind jewel-encrusted hands and mocking laughter they wouldn't have bothered to hide at all. I didn't want to like him for it, not when I knew he had an agenda where I was concerned. But I appreciated his thoughtfulness all the same. Tell Mr. Volkov I appreciate his generosity. I accepted the bag before the driver could drape it over my shoulder to be rid of its responsibility. I look forward to seeing him tonight. The driver executed a tight bow, turned on his heel, and left. I shut the door and bounced off Neely's chest. A little eavesdropper. He bought you a dress. Neely snatched the bag and hung it on a coat hook. You don't find him dressing you a tad bit, oh, I don't know, possessive? Have you ever watched Pretty Woman? I'm broke, not a hooker. I shouldered him aside and glided down the zipper. Volkov is saving me from embarrassing myself and him by showing up in hand-me-downs. A clatter drew my eye to the kitchen. Amelie stood there with a rose from my garden in one hand, its petals the same pink as the dress she'd loaned me, and one strappy shoe dangled from the other. Its mate must have slipped through her fingers when I insulted her generosity. Guess you won't be needing these. Voice tight, she tossed the rose on the coffee table and collected the fallen shoe. I'll be around later in case you want to talk when you get home. Amelie! I reached for her, but she bolted, the door slamming behind her. I didn't realize she was there. She knocked on the back door while you were talking to the driver. I didn't think you'd mind if I let her in. He crossed the room and lifted the rose to his face. She took the back way around so she could trim a boutonniere for your date. I hung my head as shame washed through me. I didn't mean it to come out like that. The difference in our classes had never mattered to me. I didn't mind the dress so much as I hated that I couldn't provide for myself, let alone on the level I had grown accustomed to as Maud's heir. Borrowing reminded me of all I had lost, but this... There was no excuse for hurting Amelie. None. Maybe I had lied to Volkov if all it took was a handful of sequins to show me Atramentis hadn't cured me of my vanity after all. She's your best friend. Neely returned to me and tapped me on the nose with the silky rosebud. She'll forgive you. Just don't give her time to stew, and make sure you take her up on her offer. I will, I promised, staring out the windows at the rear of the house like I might catch a glimpse of her. Let's see this dress. He nudged me with his shoulder. We have 2 hours to get you ready for your date, and I don't even know what I'm working with yet. You do the honors. The unveiling didn't seem as enticing as it had a minute ago. You don't have to tell me twice. He plunged his hands into the open bag and hauled the dress out with one smooth flip of his wrists. Silver and gold beadwork studded the sleeveless top portion, which rose in an elegant high collar, while the royal blue skirt flared in filmy layers. A matching silk wrap draped the left shoulder. The breath he sucked in mirrored mine, and he cackled at a note pinned to the bodice. I believe this is for you. Red is my favorite color, I read aloud. But blue reminds me of the night we met. Oh, that's so sweet, Neely cooed as he lifted out a silver evening bag. Maybe Grill should be a thing. Grill? Greer and Dan'l? He rolled his hand. Honestly, it's like you know nothing about fandom. 5 minutes ago, you were telling me crazy is hereditary, and now you're shipping us? Crazy is hereditary. He held up a finger. But look what I found in the bottom of the bag. Oh. My fingers curled to touch the strappy silver kitten heels. Those are nice. Nice? Nice. He wiped his thumb across my bottom lip. Sorry, you had a speck of drool there. I batted his hand away with a snort. Okay, so I have a weakness for strappy shoes with sensible heels. And I have a weakness for men who put their credit cards where their mouths are. A fresh shiver zinged through me. Thinking about Volkov's mouth gave me chills, and I wasn't sure they were the good kind. Amelie bit me once after I stole the last cupcake at her 7th birthday party, and I cried for hours. How much worse would full-grown fangs be? And then there was the sucking. Come on. Taking my hand, he hauled me into the downstairs bathroom to get started. Let's tame that bird's nest you call hair. Neely refused to let me sneak a peek in the mirror while he worked. After I tried one too many times, he moved us to the kitchen table as punishment, going as far as to draw the blinds so I couldn't catch my reflection either. He trusted me to paint my own nails, mostly because he decided, since he didn't have polish to match my dress, that I would have to make do with a clear coat, which he seemed certain even I couldn't botch. An hour into my makeover, the guards changed. Volkov texted me so I wouldn't worry when I found unfamiliar faces outside the door, and also so Wooly wouldn't evict them on reflex. So far, she was tolerant of Volkov and his entourage, which made me more curious than ever why the old house had a soft spot for him. Had Maud known him? His clan? Had she resuscitated one of them? More than one? Again, I wished I could access the basement and research how all this fit, but not even the weakened wards had diminished the strength of the binding on that particular door. Whatever secrets Maud had concealed down there, and there must be thousands scribbled on note cards and tucked like bookmarks into journals, she had wanted to take them with her to the grave. An hour after that, Neely pronounced me finished and escorted me to the parlor, where an antique mirror leaned against the wall, stretching from the floor almost to the ceiling. The woman staring back at me reminded me so much of those old pictures of Mom
I had to study the light fixture until I was sure no tears would roll down my cheeks and ruin my makeup. My hair had grown long during my incarceration, but I'd chopped it off below my shoulder blades with a pair of scissors after I was released. Neely had trimmed those ends before weaving a messy fishtail braid that started where my hair parted on the left and created a thick band that he had woven into an over-the-shoulder style before curling the wavy ends. I'd skimmed enough of Neely's magazines at work on slow nights to recognize the smoky eye treatment responsible for highlighting my wide, tawny eyes. The glossy lips and understated makeup gave me a healthy, natural glow that made me radiant. "You are a miracle worker," I murmured. "I knew you were good, but this is... Are you sure that's me?" "At work, you're a character. I try to tailor a look to each girl, but it's still an act." He rested his hands on my shoulders and smiled at me through the mirror. "For this, you get to be you. Just a version of you who's had 12 hours of sleep and whose go-to look doesn't always involve a messy bun that resembles the aftermath of a bomb going off on top of her head."
"Thanks."
"You're welcome." He grinned like an imp. "Now, let's see how your beau did guessing sizes." Used to getting indecent with Neely, I stripped down to my panties and bra and let him help me step into the dress. Volkov flattered me a bit by purchasing a size too small, but Neely swore at the zipper until he had me contained. Not for the first time, I thanked my time spent as a haint for teaching me breathing was optional. The shoes fit like a dream, but I kept a pair of waders strung on a hook off the side of the porch for when the spring and winter rains puddled in the yard. He could have gotten an idea of my size from those. I preferred that rationale to him having a foot fetish. "Keep eating to a minimum, and you ought to be fine," was Neely's final assessment. However the night unfolded, I doubted I'd have an appetite once Dame Lawson finished with me. "I owe you for this." I clasped his hands. "How can I repay you?" "Do you know not all the girls even check their makeup? They couldn't care less how they look or what I've done with them. Others can't be pleased no matter how I try. You're the exception. You're always happy to follow my lead, and you trust me to make you shine." He squeezed my hands. "That's all I need. This..." He swept his hand down my body. "Is soul food for the artist in me." "Well, be that as it may, I'll try not to feed you too often." I released him before he noticed my sweaty palms. "I don't want to take advantage of our friendship." That fast, my thoughts spun back to Amelie, and a fresh pang of misery stung me. She ought to be here. I felt almost naked without her. But it was my fault she was missing the big send-off. The front door opened without warning, and I sucked in a sharp breath that made me dizzy in my already restricted gown. There were only two people to whom Wooly had given carte blanche, and one of them would be nursing hurt feelings until I apologized. That left the one person I really, really didn't want to see me dressed up like I was playing princess.
"Damn!"
Boaz darted his eyes from detail to detail, like he couldn't take it all in at once.
"You're gorgeous."
He gave himself a mental shake.
"Jolene ain't gonna cut it tonight, Squirt. Not in that dress."
Or, at least, I think that's what he said. I was too stunned by the crisp black suit tailored to fit his wide shoulders, the gleam of dress shoes instead of scuffed boots. His wild hair was tamed into a neat crew cut that must have happened within the last half hour, since he hadn't mussed it yet. The pale pink rosebud threaded through the buttonhole of his lapel left me feeling 2 inches tall.
"I must have missed the memo."
He flicked it when he caught me noticing.
"I thought you were borrowing Amelie's pink dress."
I wrapped my arms around myself, wishing for the shawl. I wanted to hide the gown that had inspired awe a minute ago, but now caused my stomach to cramp.
What are you doing here? I can't let you go alone.
He shoved his hands into his pockets.
I promise to behave.
I choked on a laugh. I don't believe you. A throat cleared, and we both winced at having forgotten Neely was in the room with us. Boaz had that effect on me. Always had. Probably always would, to some degree. Boaz, I'm sure you've heard Amelie mention Neely. He works his magic on the Haints each night. I tugged one of my curls, and he glared at me until I lowered my hand. He was kind enough to help me with my hair and makeup.
Boaz Pritchard.
He stuck out his hand and winked.
I'm your new biggest fan.
Neely Torres. He blushed when they shook. Amelie said you're a holy terror, and that I should run in the opposite direction if we ever met.
Amelie's my kid sister. She tends to exaggerate where I'm concerned.
In that moment, Boaz was pure southern charm.
I'm not so bad once you get to know me.
He's right, I agreed, earning me a startled glance from brown eyes.
He's worse.
Much worse.
You shouldn't listen to her either,
he mock whispered.
She's had a raging crush on me since kindergarten. I used to have to run laps around the playground just to keep this little monkey off my back.
Considering he was right, I didn't have a conversational leg to stand on.
Jerk.
Wooly chose that moment to quaver out another excited chime, and Neely ducked his head, looking like he wanted to be anywhere other than here. I didn't blame him.
Expecting someone?
Boaz studied my attire, and I heard the pieces clicking together in his head.
You have a date.
An escort, I corrected.
I saw the...
He caught himself.
Guards.
There was an incident the other night. I kept it vague, knowing he would have leapt down my throat for keeping secrets if Neely hadn't been acting as a buffer. Mr. Volkov left me protection as a deterrent.
He did he?
The skin beneath his left eye ticked.
That's him at the door?
Pretty sure, I murmured, staring at my hands.
I'll let myself out the back. I wouldn't want to ruin your grand entrance.
He nodded at Neely.
Nice meeting you.
Another chime, a questioning note, rang out as Boaz stormed through the kitchen and into the garden.
Chin up, sweetheart.
Neely draped the shawl around my shoulders, then gathered his supplies and rolled them behind him into the living room as we approached the front door.
The rest of the night can't go worse than this.
Oh, if only that were true. This was just the first misstep in a night that promised a big fall. What would Amelie think when she saw Boaz dressed to the nines with nowhere to go and no one to go there with? What had he been thinking showing up unannounced? What was he thinking now? He must have realized the dress came from Volkov. Did that have him wondering what else the Herriter might have given me to sway me to his side? Draped in opulent gifts from Volkov, I felt bought, owned, and the real fun hadn't even started. 8. The insistent doorbell snapped me out of my shame spiral. Nothing changed the fact I had to attend the inauguration. Dame Lawson had sanctioned a wraith attack on my house, and I planned to hold her accountable. Somehow. And then there was Keet. Was he the bait luring me into a cage of her own design? Did she plan on forcing me to negotiate for his return? Or would she hand him over if I performed the act of dutiful niece on her big day? Snorting, I somehow doubted I'd wriggle off her hook that easily.
Are you ready?
Neely positioned his rolling bag near the door. Then beamed.
You're going to knock 'em dead, Greer.
Half of them were already dead, but it's not like I could tell him that if I wanted him to keep breathing. Yep. I gripped my silver clutch in front of me.
Let the dog and pony show begin.
Neely tisked at me, but opened the door with a sweeping gesture to reveal Volkov dressed in a black tux molded to his frame.